the sections that precede this, we have developed the concepts, the field of energy that the ancient and indigenous traditions suggest surround us, that we speak with through the language of our hearts, and now through the experimental evidence under laboratory conditions, those very relationships are being borne out in the language of Western science. Not only does the field link the events of our lives, the field of intelligence reflects what we have become in our hearts. We can think of this field literally as a living organism, a highly refined substance, a pulsating, vibrating substance that fills in all the spaces where we think nothing exists and mirrors back to us the choices that we've become in our hearts. And this is why when we spoke with the holy man in Tibet, when David shared with me his prayer of rain, they each reminded us that it is the feeling that is the prayer. How real is this feeling in our lives? How do we implement something like this present day? We're not always interested in going out into a field and standing in a medicine wheel and praying rain, for example. And we don't have to, because the understanding that the feeling is the prayer is such a subtle yet powerful concept. And here's the reason why. It's because in every moment of our lives, we're having a feeling. And that means in every moment of our lives, we are engaged in a modality of prayer. And the question is, do we know what prayer we are speaking into the world around us? I'm going to share a story with you regarding the power of this modality of prayer and what it means in the healing of one individual. And my intent in sharing the story for one individual is to demonstrate if this internal technology, if what we feel in our hearts can be mirrored in the world around us for one individual, what happens when many, many, many individuals get together and share a common feeling? Once again, I'm planting a seed for where we'll go with our program. So I'd like to begin this story with an experience that I had that was in the year 2000 when I was on a tour with our most recent book, The Isaiah Effect, where I was describing the element of the Dead Sea Scrolls, the great Isaiah scroll, where Isaiah is actually talking about the science, the ancient science of prayer and prophecy and how we implement these in our lives. I was in the studio in northern Colorado, and I was doing some promotional work for my book, and we took a short bathroom break. And at the same time, there was a gentleman who was doing another recording in another studio down the hall, and he was taking his bathroom break, and we began a conversation. And he said to me, he says, "You've got to see this video that I'm working on." He says, "I'm documenting the medicineless hospitals in China." And I'd heard of the medicineless hospitals, the places where people go when they are just the worst of the worst. When Western medical science says we can no longer help you, go and be comfortable until the end of your days. This is the place where people go, and they don't go to a medicineless hospital to get fixed the way that we would consider fixing a medical condition here in the West. Rather, they go into a medicineless hospital to learn new and life-affirming modalities of day-to-day living. When they go into the medicineless hospitals, they learn new and life-affirming ways of taking nourishment into their bodies, the kind of nourishment that quickens the cells and enlivens the life force in their bodies. They learn new and empowering ways of gently moving their bodies to stimulate life force, not strenuous aerobics or running a marathon or intense weightlifting. These are very ancient yet subtle methods of movement that feed the life force back into key areas of their bodies. They learn new and empowering ways to breathe the breath of life into their bodies, life-affirming ways. And at some point during their time in the medicineless hospitals, they may undergo an experience such as I'm about to share with you. So the gentleman down the hall, he said, "I'd like for you to see the video." And I said, "I would love to." And it was a really well-done video, a very beautiful documentary. And it was shot as if you, the viewer, were behind the camera walking down the streets in Beijing, and you're looking at the medicineless hospitals. As the camera approached the medicineless hospital, there's a large cast iron fence, and I could feel my heart begin to race. in my anticipation of what we would see inside, and suddenly the narrator came on and simply said, our cameras were not allowed to go beyond this cast iron fence. And I felt my disappointment because I wanted to see what was inside. And this is the way that synchronicity works. Because although I did not get to see what was inside in that particular video, I thank the gentleman for his work, for sharing his video, and I went back into the studio with mine. 2 weeks later, I heard about another teacher who was teaching in the medicineless hospitals in Beijing. And I heard that he was in this country, and I made arrangements to study with this gentleman. And part of the study was the viewing of very, very powerful, very moving video that picked up where the last video clip left off. In other words, this gentleman who had been studying and working with the healing techniques in the medicineless hospitals was allowed into the hospital to actually video and document the seemingly miraculous experiences that were happening inside. And this is what I'd like to share with you today. The video begins with a woman, apparently middle-aged. She has been diagnosed with what Western medicine has identified as an inoperable bladder cancer, approximately 3 inches in diameter. And I'll just answer some of your questions I know that you're going to have in your mind right now. Because the woman is lying down, she is awake, she is conscious, she is not under any anesthetic, she is participating willingly and believes in the process that she is about to undergo. Behind her are three practitioners who are about to create a process within themselves that will have a direct effect upon the body of the woman with the tumor. And in front of her, seated, is a technician with an ultrasound wand, just like we'd see in the hospital today if we were looking at the fetus in a woman's womb. So as the video begins, what happens is the camera zooms in on a CRT screen that is a split screen, a vertically split, into a left half and a right half. And on the left-hand side of the computer screen, we have the opportunity to see through the ultrasound into the woman's bladder. We can see the blackness, the emptiness of her bladder. We can see the outline of her bladder. We can see this 3-inch diameter tumor that is a large white lump at the bottom of the screen. So the technician pushes a button and freezes this image as a reference image on the left-hand side of the screen. So the left-hand side is a reference image of an instant in time. On the right-hand side of the screen is a real-time image. It is not a time-lapse such as the time-lapse in a nature film where we see a rose blossom unfold over a period of hours or days. This is real-time image inside the woman's bladder so that we can see her body respond to the techniques that the three practitioners are embodying as they stand next to her. Now, what the practitioners begin doing is they begin to feel a feeling in their bodies as if the woman has already been healed. They are not judging her cancer as good, bad, right, wrong, saying, bad cancer, you've got to go away, or we're going to cut you out, or we're going to irradiate you. They are simply feeling the feeling as if they are in the presence of a woman who is fully enabled, fully capacitated, fully healed. And while they are feeling that feeling, they are working with their own bodies, bringing the force of life into their bodies in conjunction with that feeling, knowing that the world around them will mirror that feeling and the results of that feeling, just as David's feeling of rain was mirrored in the world around him on a much larger scale. They begin to say a word between the three of them, and there's no magic in the word. My understanding, as I questioned the gentleman I was studying with, there was no magic in the word. They could have used any word. It was simply a word that they had agreed upon that was essentially a chant that would reinforce, a mantra that would reinforce for them the feeling as if the woman were already healed. Now, as the practitioners begin to feel their feeling, and the energy is moving through their bodies and into the woman's body, what we see on the ultrasound screen, in terms of Western medicine, is a miracle. Because in real time, in about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, under 3 minutes, the seemingly inoperable terminal condition of this bladder cancer disappears. It no longer exists. And when I asked the teacher that I was working with, when I asked him about how frequently this is done and the success rate, what he shared with me was that bladder cancers apparently are common in this part of China, and that when people who have undergone this process follow up with the kinds of things that they've been taught, the life-affirming ways to nourish their body, to breathe, life-affirming movements, the success rate for this kind of procedure is over 90% after 3 years. So it's a relatively high success rate for something like this, and extremely high when we consider that Western science felt that this was an inoperable cancer. So when I shared the video of the healing, the woman in the Medicineless Hospital with live audiences, I'm often asked a number of questions, and you may very well have some of these questions in your mind now. One of the questions people asked me, and I actually asked the gentleman that shared the video with me, was as to whether or not the woman undergoing the healing could have performed the healing on herself, if it was necessary for the other practitioners to be in the room with her. And when I first asked the gentleman that actually created the video, when I asked him this question, what he said was, he said, in all probability, the woman probably could have performed this healing on herself. However, there's something very interesting about us humans, in that we seem to feel more confident and to perform better when we're supported by others around us. When we're supported by others who believe what we believe and who are participating. And from the perspective of science, it makes tremendous sense, because it is the belief and the support of others that creates what researchers call the resonant field within the mind of God, the field where the conversation between our bodies and the stuff our world is made out of are actually being affected. So you might think about this in your life. You know in your mind, you know in your heart, that you have the answers to questions from your colleagues, maybe in a staff meeting or a board meeting or in a classroom. You know that you have the ability to perform functions and carry out ideas by yourself. How often have you held back in your life from offering the uniqueness of your perspective because that little doubt lingered? And how often have you felt more empowered by sharing those ideas with others and then as a group going forward with those ideas? I think it's interesting to see that the way that we work, the way that we implement these ideas in our lives. The gentleman that shared this information, his name is Luke Chin. And I wanted to be sure and mention both his name and from the perspective of the Medicineless Hospital, the practitioners that I've been referring to are practitioners of a tradition called Qigong. And this is a very specific form of Qigong. Now, I mention this to honor the source and where the information came from on the one hand. And on the other hand, what I know is that the Qigong practitioners were participating in a tradition of feeling in their bodies and moving the energy in their bodies in relationship to that feeling. And that is a tradition that is also shared through many yogic traditions, through martial arts traditions, through Reiki, hands-on healing, touch for health, a number of other alternative healing technologies. So while this particular example, and this video is a very, very poignant, very graphic example of how powerful our internal technology is, we do see these principles embodied in a number of other non-traditional healing techniques as well. So when I share these images with live audiences, I hear the gasps of awe from the audience, and people say, "What happened? What happened to that tumor? What just happened? Where did it go?" We've shown this to Western medical people in conferences. They've seen this one-on-one. They've seen it in groups. And what they say, almost universally, say, "Wow, that is absolutely amazing. That's a miracle. We've got to come back and study this. It certainly warrants additional study, and we will, but first we've got to find the cure for cancer." Because they see this, to them, it's an anomaly that could be studied at a later time when we have time. It's so subtle. It's a very, very different way of looking at our world. They didn't say, "Bad cancer, we have to cut you out or radiate you or make you go away." They said, of course, that is a possibility, and there are many other possibilities. They didn't think, they felt the feeling of what it felt like to be in the presence of a woman who is healed, healthy, happy. That's a prayer. When you pray for loved ones regarding their conditions, this mode of prayer invites us to pray and feel the feeling as if the condition were never there. To feel the feeling of being in their presence, of having them healthy, happy, vital, loving beings, rather than envisioning them as diseased and suffering and then asking that that change. Why does this work? It looks like a mystery until we understand the quantum hologram. The quantum hologram says there is a blueprint for a healed bladder that always existed. All they did was felt the feeling, which is the language that awakens that blueprint, and that is what replaced the possibility that had lived up until that moment in time. They acknowledge this, they honor it, and they say, now we're going to make a new choice. This is for one individual. The same principle works for peace between nations and the healing of cities when many people come together. And I'm sharing this because this is one individual. Now, there are a lot of questions I know that people bring up about this. How long does it last? For some reason, brain and bladder cancer, two big ones in this part of China. Statistically, they have over a 90% success rate with this after 3 years, as long as people honor what they have learned in the clinic. New ways to nourish their bodies, new ways to breathe. Subtle movements in their body. Many of the clients outlive their doctors by as much as 20 years. The teachings, the techniques, this is saying that we have something that lives within us. I know people in the West who have done this without knowing it. We know right now, I can tell you right off the top of my head, I know of a woman who has gone in for a breast removal because of a tumor, a cancerous tumor. They went to pinpoint it before the surgery began and there was nothing there to operate on. And the same thing happened with a male in bladder cancer. Nothing was there. And it's happened, you probably know people it's happened to as well. They are only miracles until we understand how we relate to creation. Then we can do them intentionally and they become a technology. So the reason I share it, and I hesitate sometimes to share it, because in the past people have said, now, you've got to tell me where this place is, you know, or what was that word again? It's not about the place or the word. I'm sharing this as a graphic, poignant example illustrating all the things we've spoken about. There's a direct relationship between human emotion and the physicality of our world. And this is one way that we have the opportunity to see this in our lives. So the question is, what happened? What happened in that moment that was captured on film, I believe, is a very poignant example of the principle that Isaiah left for us in his text, of the principle that the native healers embody in their work and that David shared with his prayer of rain, and that the Tibetan elders and the healers embody in their prayers. The principle simply suggests that as we choose the quality of thought, feeling, and emotion within our bodies that support what we would choose to have in our lives, that feeling is the language that communicates to the world around us, to the mind of God, to the intelligence that responds to human emotion, how to bring that reality into our world. How to bring that reality into our lives. And it's interesting because our physics now is actually beginning to support precisely such understandings. Our hearts, the feelings and emotions are reflected in the quantum fabric of the world around us, and they produce the effect that we see in our physical world. What we can say from this is that what we become from within is mirrored as the events of our lives and our world. And in the world of physics, Einstein's equations actually allowed for this relationship. Einstein's equations allowed for this connection between energy and matter in what is perhaps the best known equation of the 20th century. Albert Einstein said that E equals mc squared. You're probably all very familiar with this equation. E is the symbol in physics for pure energy, non-physical energy, on one side of the equal sign, and on the other side of the equal sign, mc squared. When we take those elements together, m is mass, c squared is the velocity of light times itself. When you take mass times the velocity of light squared, we create what we call matter. And what Einstein's equation is saying to us is that the energy on one side of the equal sign and the matter on the other side of the equal sign are different forms of the same thing. They're equal. And by being equal, they are interchangeable. Think about what this means. Energy and matter are interchangeable. What this essentially says is the implication of what this says in terms of our discussion is that if energy and matter are interchangeable, then feeling and experience are interchangeable. I'm going to say this again. If energy and matter are interchangeable, then feeling and experience are interchangeable. Feeling is non-physical. It's energy. Experience is the physical experience of the world around us in matter. The two are interchangeable. What this says is that if we can feel the possibility of something coming true in our lives, then we are capable of breathing life into that possibility, imbuing life into that, and making it real in our world. If, on the other hand, we cannot feel, truly feel, or believe in the possibility, there's a good chance that our goal or our desire may never come to pass. We must be able to feel the possibility as being real in our lives. And perhaps we've heard this before, anecdotally, if you don't believe it, it's not going to happen. If you don't believe in yourself, if you don't believe in the gifts, in the talents, the uniqueness that you bring to everything you do, if you don't believe in your ability to achieve your goals and desires, if you do not believe in them, in other words, if you cannot feel the possibility of those things being true in your lives, then how can they ever come to pass? This may be precisely what Einstein was saying to us. Well, Western science now, in looking at these relationships and these principles, has found an even deeper relationship. And it begins, not surprisingly, within our hearts. What we know is that in every moment of every day, there is a conversation going on between our hearts and our brains. It's a dialogue. There's a signal that is being generated within our hearts that is going directly to our brains, and it is the signal that tells our brains whether or not to create life-affirming or life-denying chemistry in our bodies. So, for example, in our hearts, when we are feeling love, compassion, understanding, forgiveness, peace, tolerance, there's a very nice, evenly matched, rhythmic signal that we are sending as a conversation to our brain that is releasing the kinds of chemistry, the DHEA levels, for example, or the precursors to DHEA and all the hormones in our bodies that affirm life in our bodies. What studies have shown is that when in our hearts, when we can feel the feelings of gratitude and appreciation, genuine feelings of gratitude and appreciation in our hearts, those chemicals in our brains creating DHEA, the precursor to every other hormone in our bodies, actually increases over 100% over a 6-hour period of time. We didn't do anything different other than change the way we're feeling in our hearts. We didn't take a special supplement. We didn't do a special kind of exercise. We didn't have a crystal on the altar or a special elixir in the refrigerator, although all those may help and are tools and paths that lead us into the kinds of understandings that we're talking about now. The truth is, as well as they work, we probably don't need them because everything that we need from this perspective lives within each of us already, and it's in the form of a language that we hold in our hearts that speaks to the world around us. The same studies have shown that when in our hearts we are holding the feelings of anger, rage, frustration, jealousy, we're sending a very different kind of signal to our brains. And our brains begin to release life-denying chemistry that matches the anger, the rage, the hate, the jealousy. We begin to release cortisol, for example, which is known as the stress hormone. And those rates are shown to increase over 23%. Within just a few hours of feeling those kinds of feelings in our bodies. So there is a conversation, there is a dialogue that is going on every moment of every day between our hearts and our brains based on what we are feeling in our hearts. And it begs us to ask the question one more time, do we really know? Are we aware of what we're feeling in our hearts? What are you feeling right now? If you're listening to this program as you're driving your car, what are you feeling in your heart as you're focused on holding your vehicle between the lines and the freeway? If you are on a busy airplane or a bus or a subway and the commotion of the people around you, what are you feeling in your heart as you're considering the possibilities of what we're sharing in this program? Well, the dialogue within our bodies is important because it creates effects that extend beyond our bodies. What we know is that as we feel the feelings in our hearts, it changes the chemistry in our brains. That brain chemistry then changes what's happening in the cells of our bodies, and the effects are registered beyond ourselves on the quantum level in the field of energy that links all of creation. And by virtue of this, I'm sharing this with you because this is the reason why it is so very important for us to be aware of the feelings that we hold in our hearts, how we respond to the other people and to the events of the world around us. Earlier in this program, I offered a verbal flowchart, The Great Spiritual Mystery, and you have a copy of it in your CD workbook. And just as a reminder, the flowchart simply said to us, if you'd like to refer to it, it said that something that we do in our lives triggers a process inside of our bodies. That process interacts with the forces of creation and affects our physical world, and if we do not understand how this process works, we believe that we have seen a miracle. Okay, this is the way I stated the verbal flowchart, The Great Spiritual Mystery, early in this program. And I also promised that we would revisit this flowchart once again after we've had some of these discussions, and we would give new names to each of the elements of that flowchart through the language of Western science, and what science now says to us about the way this relationship works in our lives. So I'll invite you now to look at the updated flowchart that is also in your CD workbook. And in the language of Western science, what we can now say, we can replace the language of the spiritual mystery with what the experimental evidence is showing us regarding the way this flowchart works. And it goes like this. What we can now say is that heart-based feeling and emotion changes the chemistry of our bodies. And from those chemical changes are produced the quantum effects that change our physical world. I'll say this one more time. Heart-based feeling and emotion, that's the first box, change the chemistry of our bodies. That's the second box. Once the chemical level of our bodies change, it produces quantum effects. That's the third level. It changes the energy surrounding our bodies onto the fourth box, and is that energy that affects our physical world. In the example of the medicineless hospital and the healing of the woman with bladder cancer, heart-based feeling and emotion of the practitioner surrounding her, and she included, she was participating in the process, changed the chemistry of their bodies. It produced a field, a quantum effect between the practitioners working with her and the woman herself. Her body, the physical matter, responded to those changes. If we do not understand how these relationships work, we believe we're still looking at miracles. So this is the perspective of the medical science. They said, you know, this is a miracle. It's anomalous. It isn't really worthy of our time to study this in detail now, on the one hand. On the other hand, if we understand that these relationships are consistent, that they are predictable, that if we do these things in a certain way, they will result in the same effects time after time. By definition, we've just defined Western science. This is the definition of science. If you do a certain thing in a certain way, and each time you do this thing in this way, the results are predictable, they're consistent, they're repeatable, time after time after time, then it is so, and it has become a science. And by that very definition, what I'm describing to you inside of your body is a science. It is a technology. It's an internal technology that says that we may choose the way we respond to the events of the world around us, the way we respond to our lives, in every moment of every day, we have the power to make that choice. And when we do, that we also have the power to participate in how those events play out in our world. By virtue of that, we are speaking of an internal science, an internal technology. From the perspective of this internal technology and the way these things work in our lives, ancient traditions, esoteric traditions, native shaman, indigenous healers, left to us four keys, four secrets of prayer and healing. You can also refer to your CD workbook to review these as well. These are four secrets that help us to understand and provide us the guidelines in terms of why our relationship to our world works the way it works. I'd like to share each of these four and say just a few words about each of them to lay the foundation into the next section where we may begin applying these understandings to the events that are unfolding in our lives and our world today. The first of these suggests that we are already healed and that peace already exists in our world. And this secret comes from the understanding of vertical time. It says that within every moment of time, all possibilities already exist. Within every moment of time, we are already healed. Every healing that we can ever imagine, all the peace in our world already exists, as well as all the death, all the destruction, all the disease. It says that for the woman in the medicineless hospital in Beijing, there was a reality that was already present where her bladder cancer simply did not exist. However, because of choices in her life, choices in lifestyle, choices in belief and focus that we are not aware of right now, her focus, her reality brought to life the possibility where the cancer did exist. But it says for all of us, in the instant we experience something that we don't like, in that very instant, all the possibilities, all the parallel universes simultaneously coexist where that very experience is no longer there. The key is that we must claim the experience. And the way that we claim it is by feeling the feeling as if it has already come true. If we're claiming healing in our bodies, we must feel that healing even in the presence of conditions that suggest something other than the healing is happening. If we're choosing a nurturing relationship in our friendships or in our romance or in our families or with our siblings or our parents, then we must feel the feelings as if that nurturing already exists. This is the irony. It's such a bizarre irony. And what it says to us essentially is we must become already the very things that we choose to have in our lives. We must become the very things that we choose to have in our lives. The second secret, prayer and healing, is that although we may believe that there are many, many people in our world today, and statistics say that we share our world with about 6.2 billion of our global family, and what our studies are telling us is that there's only one of us here. There's a single field that we are all linked to. Many people, there's only one of us here. And that each of us are holographic in nature. Every time one of us chooses a new way to respond to the challenges of life, chooses a new way to respond to the aggression of another individual, a new way to get our point heard in a corporate boardroom without pounding our fists on the desk or saying the worst words or shouting the loudest, a new way to make our choice in our family known of what movie we'd like to see or what we'd like to have for dinner or which pizza we'd like to have for the evening. Seemingly insignificant little moments in our lives, each time one of us finds a new way to respond to those conditions in our lives, to some degree, the entire field benefits from that. The collective benefits from our choices. And what this suggests is that as many people come together with a common choice, the field, the mind of God, will mirror that choice back to us as the reality of our moment in time. And this becomes particularly a powerful concept when we talk about the potential of global conflict, nations at war, and the choices of how, as a nation, we choose to deal with the conflict, how, as a world, we choose to deal with our conflict. Secret number three is that our world mirrors our personal as well as our collective response. We choose in each moment of life. I invite you just to consider this. The ancient Essenes said to us that the most powerful moment in the day is the moment in between the inhale and the exhale of a breath. The most powerful moment is the time in between the inhale and the exhale. It's because on the inhale, something is happening. On the exhale, something is happening. And the moment in between is the space where nothing is happening, and it opens the door for the potential of all possibilities. This idea of the in-between is so powerful. In the indigenous traditions, the moment when the sun goes down at the end of the day and before the sky darkens with the night, what many of the ancients called the crack between the worlds, this is the most powerful time of the day. It's no longer daytime. It's no longer nighttime. It's in between. It's the space in between. And that's where the power comes to choose what our lives will be like in the next day and to give thanks for the day that's already been. Well, the same concept applies to you in each nanosecond of each day. And I invite you to think about this. In every moment of every day, you make a choice. In every moment of every day, you either make a life-affirming or a life-denying choice of the way you see yourself in your world and your life. It happens in every moment of every day. In every moment of every day, you either breathe a life-affirming, full, deep, full-body yogic breath, or a life-denying, short, brief, shallow breath that really doesn't nourish your body well at all. In every moment of every day, you are choosing to think the kinds of thoughts in terms of the way that you see others around you. I believe that is a really good metaphor for the way our world appears to work. Because the ancients say to us, now quantum physics is saying something very similar, that this world is a reflection of something in the unseen worlds. But this seems real to us because this is where our focus is right now. So the visible world is actually the reflection of the visible relationships, our health, career, romance, husband, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, jobs, no jobs, abundance, lack of abundance, all those things here in this world are mirrors of what's happening in the unseen world. And if that relationship is true, then what it says to us is what we experience in our beliefs is what becomes in our visible world, in our lives. Our thoughts, feelings, and emotions in the unseen world are what we experience here. And that's important. When we live from within principles of honesty, trust, and integrity here, we find ourselves in supportive, healthy relationships and careers here. When we find ourselves with illness, lack, broken relationships, failed careers, our lives are in chaos in this world, it's inviting us. All it's doing is inviting us. It's not judging us as right, wrong, good, or bad. It's inviting us to look and see what's happening in here. How do we conduct our lives? Are we living lives dishonoring life-affirming principles of integrity? Feeling, by definition, is the union of thought and emotion. Emotion is the power source. Thought is the direction. In the ancient traditions, we are capable of two primary emotions, love and whatever you believe the opposite of love is. When we get deep into those teachings, we find out that they're one and the same. Most people say love and fear. So this is how a feeling works. We have a thought about something, and we either have a love of that something or a fear of that something, and that becomes our feeling, and feeling is the language that speaks to the world around us. Through our quantum hologram of all possibilities, what we become in our beliefs, we experience in our world. So the best way to remember this is we must become the things that we like to experience. If we're choosing compassion, understanding, love, supporting relationships around us, we must be those very things. And it makes a lot of sense. Now, quantum physics is validating this from their perspective, and the ancient traditions are saying it from theirs. From that perspective, husbands, wives, lovers, friends, careers, health, abundance, all the things of our lives
are a language. If you want to know what your inner thoughts, feelings, and emotions are all about, look at the world around you. Are you experiencing loving, supportive, nurturing relationships of health, career, friendship, husbands, wives, lovers, abundance? And if so, that will say to you that your language is a life-affirming language, and those are the patterns that you awaken. If you're experiencing other than that, in this world, it's not a bad thing, you're not being judged. It's an invitation to look at your thoughts, feelings, and emotions, your beliefs, your perceptions, your judgments of what's happened. And the good news is that it works both ways, because when we change in here, we can expect those changes in the world around us. The key is that each experience is the product of thoughts, feelings, and emotions.
When you look out your car window right now, or you look across the room at people who are near you, some may be strangers, some that you love and hold dear, about each of those people, you're having a belief. You're having a feeling in this very instant. Are they life-affirming feelings? Are they life-denying feelings? Are you judging those people for the way they live their lives and what their life lessons have taught to them? Or do you empower those people to have the strength and the courage and the wisdom to recognize the choices that they have in their lives, the courage and the strength to live those choices into their highest good? In every moment of our lives, we are choosing life-affirming or life-denying choices. And our world around us, by virtue of the field, is mirroring those choices back to us in the peace between governments, the peace between nations, the peace within our families, the relationships with our friends, relationships with our romance. Do you find yourselves in jobs with people who are intolerant, in short, or with supervisors who are demanding and seemingly unfair? And if so, is that a pattern that happens again and again and again? And if it does, why would that be? Your world is mirroring what you have become from within. Is it possible that in those seemingly mundane experiences of romance and career and supervisors and friendships and relationships, that you're being shown a language, a nonverbal language in creation, mirroring back to you precisely the choices that you've made in every moment in every life, and how all those choices are averaged together into the collective moment in time? This is the third secret of prayer and healing. The fourth secret is simply that non-denominational, feeling-based prayer is the language of creation. From this perspective, our entire program essentially is the fourth secret of prayer and healing. It's saying to us that we are in a conversation. We're having a dialogue, or maybe it's a monologue sometimes, but primarily a dialogue with the world around us. We are feeling feelings as we interpret our experiences, and those feelings now are a language that we're projecting into the field of consciousness, the quantum hologram, nature's mind or the mind of God that surrounds us, and the events of our lives will align themselves with those fields and play back to us. If we have the wisdom to recognize what our lives are saying to us, then we have the wisdom to recognize how that conversation is occurring in our lives. So from this point forward, as you go about your daily activities and you witness the events in the world around you, if you witness a car accident at an intersection and you find yourself saying, "Oh, the poor man, I hope no one was hurt." While you may have done this in the past, I'll invite you to allow yourself the possibility now to participate as you drive by in that event, rather than saying, "I hope no one was hurt," removing yourself from the event, feeling powerless in the situation, to recognize that whoever was involved in that accident is part of the same field as you are as you drive through the intersection. And by feeling the feeling and giving thanks of gratitude and appreciation for the health and the safety of whoever was in that vehicle, even as for the brief moment as you continue on your way, in that way you employ this principle. You become part of the events that are unfolding around you, rather than simply passive observers of the world around you. The key to these understandings, the key to the secrets of prayer and healing, is simply that our heart links us to the mind of God through our beliefs, through the feelings that we hold within our hearts. And as we understand those feelings, we understand what they're saying to us, we become conscious of how we're creating them through the emotions that we pump into the thoughts during the days of our lives, then we are empowered to make the kinds of changes, to consciously participate in the events of our lives. And this, as individuals, is what empowers us to collectively choose the kind of future, the kind of history that we'd like to leave as our legacy. This empowers us to speak directly within the mind of God. Through our next section, now we have the opportunity to literally apply these into the global experiences and the events that are unfolding in our world today, within our families and within our communities, so that we no longer feel powerless as we witness the suffering as well as the good things in the world that are around us, and that we feel empowered to be a part and to participate in those events.